Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Modern Workplace Hacks podcast. My name's Tom Freer, and today we've got something a little bit different. This is a recording of a webinar that I hosted a couple of weeks ago with Jack Chapman, who is the VP of Threat Intelligence at Egress. And in this webinar, Jack and I are discussing all things phishing. We go through how phishing attacks originate, what to look for, how they're bypassing traditional email security systems, and then we'll look at sort of the technology from Egress around how they are developing their system and platform to help organizations prevent the risk of phishing and business email compromise to their user base. This is pretty exciting conversation. Jack and I get a little bit technical at times, but I think there's a lot of value to be had. If you're looking for the visuals for it, we have a webinar online. Feel free to reach out and we can grab you a link to that as well. But sit back and enjoy this episode. Look forward to your feedback. Today, I'm very excited to have Jack from Egress. And Jack is the VP of Threat Intelligence. And he's going to run us through essentially how phishing works. We're going to go through some three key examples of what that all looks like. And we'll sort of be having a bit of a conversation as we go. Jack, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. Really great to be here today. Looking forward to digging into sort of the phishing landscape and hopefully having some really interesting conversations.
Well, it certainly is a an interesting topic, and I don't think it's certainly not going away, and that's what we're finding. And I think that's why this is really timely. And we've started working with Egress in the last couple of months, and I thought it'd be great to get you on, and you know everything about the threats that are happening. So share a bit of that with the audience. I guess it's interesting to see where phishing has evolved, and I think that's one of the key things we're seeing. It's no longer your rich uncle in Nigeria who's going to leave you some money. It's a little bit more sophisticated than that now, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you touched on a really interesting point of sort of that evolution and why is phishing still evolving at such a rapid pace? And I think part of the answer to that is we as organizations have matured our cyber posture. We've improved, we've gotten better, and the vast majority of criminals are in it to earn money. And rather than spending sort of £500,000 on a really clever technical zero day, I'll just ask Bob in the IT team for his password. And that's where we're seeing a lot more investment into the phishing space, where you think it's not a new problem, but it's definitely evolving into that more sophisticated angle.
And that's interesting to say, and that's generally why it's evolving into that, is because it is still the easiest entry point to an organisation. Because I think everyone sort of spent money on firewalls and intrusion detection and all these sort of things. So that typical thought of a hacker sitting there and programming and smashing a firewall probably isn't as relevant or prevalent, particularly in that mid and large size organization. Yeah, at a national scale and a government scale, they're still getting attacked, but email is still a very easy entry point.
Absolutely. And I think another interesting point to that is quite often email is almost the testing mechanism for a criminal. It's if they can get that first sort of foothold in an organization, they can then either dedicate resources to do further attacks, or they can sell that login to other criminals who really want to attack that particular organization.
And that's how they're working, aren't they? This isn't just a random, we're going to send out a million emails and hope someone clicks. I mean, that's part of the strategy, but there is a lot more thought behind many of these attacks, isn't there?
Absolutely. I think it's probably one of the most interesting but also worrying things which has kind of changed in the criminal ecosystem is they're moving towards specialization. We've got loads who will create the templates, the toolkits, those very technical criminals who almost sell a package that's guaranteed to get into your user's inbox, versus on the other side, those criminals who sort of send those attacks, get those logins, then we'll sell it to specific groups. So it's almost very much almost like a business organization change.
The whole ecosystem happening there.
As much as I hate to call them an ecosystem because it adds credibility, it is completely an ecosystem.
Yeah. It's scary, I guess, because that's probably
the thing is, this is not just, as we mentioned, not a random sort of approach. There is a whole thing happening. These guys are really good at crafting the emails. These guys are really good at sending them through. Once we get the details, we're going to send it to these guys who are going to do the identity fraud and all sorts of stuff. So it all got to start, and it seems to start with email in a lot of cases.
It is often sort of that first sort of port of call for a criminal. And one of the sort of historic issues with email from our point of view is so many people still think it is that prince, that uncle who's a prince who's trying to get money for you.
Yeah.
And the reality is just so far different from that. It's quite a disconnect between some of the language we might use, which is the same language we've used for 5 or 10 years. But the attacks are fundamentally different.
Different. Yeah, okay. And we know they've evolved as well because, again, early days of email, we'd get that. And you could look at it and go, that's definitely a rubbish email, a spam, poor spelling, mistakes all over the place. That's gone now. Like, they're still the crude ones you get through and you pick them easily. But when we look at some of these ones we'll run through in a moment, they're pretty bang on.
Absolutely. And it's interesting you mentioned crude emails. You saw an attack from sort of a multinational level just last month where the use of crude emails generated so much noise, it covered up some of the spear phishing, the targeted attacks underneath it.
Right.
So I think it's almost negligent perhaps on our behalf to think, oh, they're just sending out bad phishing attacks. Why are they doing this?
They're actually using that. Yeah, okay. And I think we'll segue a little bit there. You mentioned spear phishing. So there are different types of phishing attacks as well that we'll see or that we can talk about, because phishing is not just your blanket email. When we talk about phishing, we can get right down to that someone is being specifically targeted by the criminals in this case.
Absolutely. There are very much different layers of phishing, but also different sophistications, different tools used to create it. I mean, if you think about it, at the highest level, all phishing is an unwanted email that's malicious. So it's a real broad umbrella. Mm. You've got everything from a phishing attack coming from a compromised supplier, which has sort of three-stage payload. So a payload that takes you to three different places, all the way through to just a phishing attack that's asking for a bit more information about your organization so they can go and perform other types of cyber attacks.
Ah, right. Okay. So it can be as innocuous as that, and you might not even realize.
Absolutely. And those are sometimes some of the most dangerous ones, especially looking at incident response and trying to trace things back and learn lessons. If you can't trace it back to a source, that's still an open gateway. One key thing to consider is both, how can you prevent these bad things from happening? How can you respond to them properly? But also, how can you sort of evolve, as we're all doing in the cyberspace continuously, around that, people, processes, and technology?
Mm. Yeah, and that's key, isn't it? Because we do, particularly in the IT space, tend to spend a lot more time on the technology aspect of it. And I think we've all been sort of guilty of missing that, particularly the people side of it, because I think that's where we know and can see that is always the biggest, I'll say, weakness in an organization, is because that's where we're targeting. So people generally are the ones who will make mistakes. I mean, I think we know the technology is getting more advanced, that if it picks up something, it's going to pick it up. But we still have that challenge of educating people to know what to look for, how to try and identify them, or at least give them guidance, which is what I really like about the Egress solution, and we'll have a look at, is that at the very least, it's giving people notice of what's potentially happening to keep them aware. And that's one thing I think is really crucial, is that awareness factor from an end user perspective.
I think you've hit on a really important point there, Tony. It's quite often when we think traditionally in cybersecurity, we view those pillars that people, technology and policy is almost separate. Mm. But at the end of the day, they're all very interconnected. And we've seen too many case studies and real life examples where people have jobs to do. Say if you work in support, your job is to be helpful.
Mm.
And if technology is getting in the way of that, there's sometimes very difficult if those people aren't brought with us on this journey, if they aren't educated, trained in terms of the whys, the challenges. They'll find a way around the technology if it's stopping them doing their jobs, because they've got jobs to do.
They've got jobs to do. And that's people. I mean, and human nature is all about, we're designed to be lazy in that sense, to find the simplest way through. And generally that's a workaround of some description. So yeah, fun times. Well, Jack, let's jump in and let's have a look at sort of how phishing works. And we've got some really good examples here that we'll pull apart. And I think this will provide some really interesting insight to a lot of people. So let's jump into that.
Absolutely. So we've picked out three examples which cover quite a broad range here today. The first one sort of like to touch on is actually from a business email compromise attack from a New Zealand-based freight company. And one of the key things around phishing is it's one of those odd attacks which, compared to others, it's non-vertical specific. Almost every organisation with people in will have this as a challenge and how to train against it, how to get technical controls in place. But this was quite an interesting one because quite often when we're talking about sort of email compromise, and this is one of the big shifts in that threat landscape in the last year or two, is historically attackers have purchased domains, aged them for a couple of years, and then used them to send out attacks. This is essentially what allowed them to get past traditional security solutions.
Because those domains are actually real.
Exactly. Yeah. They're aged, they're not on any block lists. They've got good trust. But the thing they've all realized, and what's really been this sort of seismic change in this landscape, is they've realized legitimate accounts have these characteristics as well. So why not just target someone, compromise them, and use them as an asset? Which is quite almost a scary proposition. And it's something we're seeing in an exponential fashion, where it is sort of becoming the most popular method of gathering. It's almost from how malware and ransomware spread in the 90s and 2000s, of that one led to 10, which led to 100.
Yep.
That's what's happening in the sort of criminal markets at the moment with compromised accounts on sale.
And when we talk about a compromised account, we're actually talking about a legitimate email account on someone's system that has had their username and password stolen, essentially, and the hackers and the attackers are logging into their mailbox as that person.
Exactly. Yep. It's the use of that real legitimate piece. And quite often this is including MFA details as well in order to target those systems. But I'll come on to that in a bit more detail later. So really interesting thing with this attack is 6,000 emails were sent from this sort of one account within sort of a 24-hour period. So it's quite a lot. The payload only activated on sort of 6 of 58 different AV scanners. So it was relatively new, relatively sort of cutting through a lot of pre-existing systems. And interestingly, especially on the link, it was a two-step payload for that next credential theft. So it was almost air-gapped between different systems. So the nasty bit wasn't on the first piece.
So that's why it wasn't potentially getting picked up either by any of the scanners and things like that.
Exactly. Yep. One thing to always keep in mind, especially when thinking about sort of the criminal ecosystem, is normally they always do something for a reason because it's costing them time and money to develop these tools and techniques. So there's always a good reason for them doing it. Yep. And that's what a lot of my time is spent on. But I'd like to talk a bit more about the anatomy, because quite often we think about phishing, we're quite often just focused on what it's delivering, really. And that's almost a missed opportunity, both from a training point of view, but also a technical point of view. And some of the interesting elements here is understanding how are humans tricked, really. And this boils down to sort of, can you create a sense of urgency? Is there credibility within the email? And what's the ask? Those are sort of the very basic elements. And in this area, we've got the fact that we've got a financial subject in the subject line, which aligns with the person sending it. Because that's one of the things we often ask people to check is, are you expecting this? Does it make sense that this person's asking you? And this is one of the powerful things, is the fact that this was sent from a compromised supply chain account. So not just a compromised business, but a pre-existing relationship.
It was a known email address, so we're receiving this message and probably in a known context as well.
Exactly. Yep. So, and as you'd imagine, this is one of the growing threats for 2023, 2024, is attackers have realized compromised accounts work really well, But if there's a pre-existing relationship from a supply chain compromised account, it works even better.
Yep. Yep.
And this is where this is almost the next shift we're seeing today going forward. Interestingly, in order to add to this credibility and this narrative they're painting throughout this email, they've also got the fact that can you update the bank details in this bottom of the email? And this basically just reinforces it. It's expected content. And this expected content is almost don't raise any red flags, just continue the narrative in order to drive the potential victim forward. And that's that false sense of security piece.
Yep.
And the last point for this is the fact that it does have a legitimate logo and company information, especially as most companies sort of assign signatures and sign-offs and other sort of admin-based tasks around email into the email ecosystem because they've compromised the account. They have access to all of this.
All of that as well. So it's going to look very, very legitimate. Well, and for all intents and purposes, it's a legitimate email as well in that it's Absolutely. Coming from a known source, a known address. We've seen this address before, potentially, those type of things.
Exactly. And that's the challenge. And that's where sort of the sort of reactive approach, which has sort of we as a security industry have taken in the last couple of decades of we've seen something bad. Let's update a block list. In order to stop that, falls over completely.
Yep.
And this is where I know a lot of our time is spent looking at, can we proactively see these things? Because this is what, when we talked at the top of the call, Tom, around what does phishing actually look like today? This is what it's looking like. It is what it looks like. Mature. It is very sophisticated.
Yep.
And it is incredibly successful.
Yeah.
So that's one sort of key example of what these things look like. But just to change tact in something I think we can all be familiar with, and it's quite a classic of a very well-known brand attack being used to trick our users. And the reason I pick Netflix here is because typically with brand impersonations, they follow sort of a cycle over time where criminals will use them for a while, and then sort of train users and get mitigations in place, and then they're sort of parked flat for a while because they're less successful. And this is in part weaponizing the 24-hour news cycle. We've seen wherever there's a global event, within 24 hours, we're going to see some sort of fish around it.
Yeah, okay.
Which is an interesting thing to keep in mind for any operational bases and so on. And Tom, I'd be interested for your views here is one thing we've seen is quite a sharp targeting for mobile users where actually some phishing attacks are specifically designed to look much better on mobile than desktop. That's where the focus is.
Well, and that's not surprising because when we look at stats of mobile usage and where people are getting those messages first, are typically on their mobile. So it's not surprising. And in all honesty, I mean, I get them every day in my Hotmail and my Gmail accounts because I've got no protection on there. But you're right, because that's only where I look at it is on my mobile, and it comes up and I get the Amazon, I get the Netflix. I mean, here in Australia, it's the Australia Post is an absolute classic where they're going. But they're really optimized for that mobile where it's quickly, it's accessible. You're only going to be using your thumb on it and you can click on it and you're done.
Absolutely. I imagine that's quite sort of a challenge, especially sort of in this post-COVID world where everyone's more out and about, early morning versus late night. You're checking details on your phone. And unfortunately, criminals have realized this. They've understood human behavior in order to increase their chances of success.
And I'm guessing they've realized as well, they'll be targeting these sendouts at times to time zones and, I got this email at midnight. Well, that's no good because and they will be looking at, well, when are people going to be on their phone the most in the morning when they get up and when they go to bed type thing? Well, I'll start sending those messages then as well.
Absolutely. Like sort of understanding the time of day to send attacks, because that it's not only sending attacks at the time of day, but what types of attacks are they sort of traveling into work, for example? That's the time of day where these sort of credibility attacks like the Netflix, like Amazon's, like Woolworths, their higher success rate, because it's that blend. You're not in work yet.
Your mind is in between. This is a bit of an out there question, but I'm guessing with the volume of email that you guys start to see, do you see those? You see those trends in that, like the phishing identification?
Absolutely. We sort of very much, one of our focuses isn't just to say when's phishing at time. Our mission really is to understand to a much deeper level of what exactly is an attacker doing at the time and why.
Yeah.
Because if we can understand the why, that allows us to sort of drive the defences.
Yeah.
So my favourite question is always why.
Well, literally. what's the saying? You got to ask why five times to get to the real reason.
Absolutely, Tom.
Yeah.
And I think the other interesting thing, especially in terms of the time of day attacks, is also mirroring the payloads as well. If you're trying to deliver ransomware and someone's just on their phone, which is much more isolated than the corporate network, versus trying to get their account, for example, where people are more used to have to enter in details on a phone versus a computer, which is automatically signed in through corporate firewall and other mechanisms. So it's quite an interesting
sort
of consideration.
So what is, I mean, we look at this one here and we go through it. What is, and you can, what's the objective of this is to get a credit card detail by the look of it, or even a compromised account from that perspective, because most people use the same email address and password for everything.
Exactly. So this would be, so I've seen four or five different permutations of this specific attack.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing, because this is a templated attack, i.e. it's a kit someone can go and buy, they can choose what payload they want to use for it.
Right.
Some will try and scrape Netflix accounts because they can sell. A lot are targeting Office 365 accounts where, oh, in order to access this, you need to log in with your Office 365. Your email's been shut.
Ah, right. Yep.
You need to refresh your email. And then others are direct pixel perfect copies of the host's webpage with credit card details.
Okay.
So it's almost like in a brick
wall. Pick your poison. Yeah.
Exactly. And especially just to go back to the time of day, another attack which isn't talked about often, but we're seeing a lot more of it, is something called a DNS attack. And that's where, Tom, I'll send you a phishing email at 6 a.m. The link redirects to your local news site. However, at 8:30 a.m., after it's been sitting in your infrastructure for a while, it will redirect to the malicious site. And it's understanding, again, to that time of day, when are they going to read that email?
Well, it also plays to the technology in the background as well, because I know for most scanners will scan that URL as it comes in, and then some of the advanced ones, which I know Microsoft do, will detonate that at time of arrival, but they don't re-detonate it afterwards necessarily.
Exactly. And that's where, especially if you think about email, you think when it's in, like nothing's going to change.
Yep.
It's okay, but you've got things like pixel trackers. We can redirect pixels or images to a different page.
Wow.
You can change where links redirect to. It's a lot more malleable than you might originally think. And unfortunately, wherever there's possible for attackers to be more successful, they're going to take advantage of
it. They'll find it. Yep, that's right.
Just to talk a bit more detail about this one, I think the most obvious thing with this attack is the fact that it is a highly stylized sort of template, the fact that it does have legitimate images, it does have legitimate colors and fonts, and it all looks quite good, really.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of things going on sort of under the surface, really, where, and this is a very common technique for anything from a templated attack, where they'll use non-ASCII characters. You see here in the bottom right, where they've got different ways of representing Netflix or help desk, some common words where some traditional solutions or some manual filters have been set up to try and catch, and they break those systems by injecting all sorts of nasty and odd things in. And this is sort of the first example where attackers aren't only targeting your people, they're also targeting your security solutions as well. And that's why it's so important for solutions to be robust as well as do the day job.
Well, and I think it adds to the argument of layering as well, layering your technology.
Absolutely. I think layering, I think I'd even push to go a step further there. not only your technology, but layering technology with people,
yes,
with the policy, and interlinked multiple, as many layers as is needed
as possible,
a reasonable level.
Yeah.
But especially when it comes to email, where email is almost the gateway to so many other nefarious attacks, highly encourage those elements. I mean, one of the things we touched on earlier, Tom, was MFA.
Yep.
And it's a fantastic layer to add, but in and of itself, probably about 10 to 15% of phishing attacks have methods in them to defeat MFA.
Oh, wow. That's scary.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that either that's using OAuth services from Microsoft, so they're actually live, go and check the fact that the details are correct, and then change them. But we've seen other cases where, especially through data breaches, where they've got an employee's phone number as well as their email, they just spam their phone until they give them what they want.
Yeah, yeah. And it's I've seen that happen, where particularly when you're using the push notifications on your authenticator, your password's been compromised and they just keep peppering. And at some point, you inadvertently press that approve button and they're in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's quite a few things here, Tom, that sort of it's quite aware of.
Yeah, and it's challenging for an organization, because the criminals know that there's only so much you can invest in as well. Like, we can layer and layer and layer, but ultimately it all comes at a cost. So criminals will be looking at, well, we know that most people are going to be using this or this or this combined. Well, how do we design stuff to get around it? That's a real, real challenge. So even mixing up things from a business perspective may come into play as well.
Absolutely. Just the last attack I'd like to show, again, another really well-known brand, really sort of stylized, professional looking, and it looks great on your mobile or your desktop, is sort of the classic delivery-based fish. I mean, these are ones that we see sort of every day. I receive these personally every day. And even for myself, I'm humble enough to say they've almost caught me out a couple of times, because I order things on Amazon every day. I'm one of those people, Tom.
Well, I mean, we all do. And I think we saw and you'd be able to correlate this, we would have seen a massive uptick in these type of attacks during COVID, because everybody was ordering online and getting a delivery from who knows who. Like, and it's still the case now. We're constantly ordering online. We're expecting something to arrive. Yeah,
absolutely. There's been such an exponential increase in these sorts of attacks, both from you've made a new order, your organization has ordered something on your behalf.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
As well as your delivery base.
Yep.
And one of the key intents behind this is that human curiosity of it gives you enough content and credibility to make you think, okay, this is probably DHL. Fantastic. Yep. Now, what's on that picture, Tom? I really need to see what it's saying there. And that's actually the payload. That's the link.
Oh, so click on that, see the bigger picture, and off you. Yeah, okay.
And off you go. Oh, sorry, you need to re-authenticate your Microsoft to download this image.
Oh, wow. Yep.
And you're in trouble.
And people will. They, okay, yeah, cool, no worries. I need to see what I'm getting. Or have they got the right address on there or something like that? Yep.
Exactly. And a lot of work we've done shown sort of this style of attack, which did exponentially increase during sort of COVID, but it's around to stay because it is incredibly successful. And especially in organizations where there are lots of moving parts, people are hybrid working, it's incredibly challenging at times. But one thing I'd like to show on this is actually this attack's very successful against people, but it's incredibly successful against some traditional technology. And that's because of the templated underlying piece. And there's quite a lot of different methods in here, but these are essentially obfuscation techniques criminals use within their email code to basically try and break the email scanners, break the email processors and the security. And just a couple of high-level methods, just to give everyone a bit of a understanding of what's going on here. You can use white font on white backgrounds, which is zero size, to break up text. Then if you're looking for particular words, you're never going to find it.
Never going to find them.
Exactly. You've got things like the Asian override character, which will make the computer read right to left, not left to right.
And that can be embedded into the email. So, right. And I think this goes to the point of technology is not the silver bullet in that case, because people will just go, well, why can't you just block that sender? Well, we can block the sender, but it doesn't come from the same sender every time. Well, why can't you block that subject line? Well, because the subject line changes every time. And to your point here, why can't we block the text in there? Well, because that's not actually what it says.
Exactly. Yeah. It's that mismatch. And especially what you mentioned there is really interesting around polymorphic attacks where little bits of the email is different every time, yep. Be it the payload, be it the subject. That's automated from an attacker's point of view.
So where it might be change every time, yeah.
Exactly. So our old reactive approaches to these attacks are falling further and further behind.
Yeah.
That's where I know a lot of our work and working with you tools are looking at that proactive approach, which we can sort of have technology, but also work with people as yes. well in order to join those together. Because at the end of the day, if an attacker is targeting people through what the victim sees, and yep. they're targeting technology on the right, and the attackers are thinking that way, we need to think the same way to ensure we can mitigate these threats.
Yep. So it's the key is the combination of the technology and the people. Obviously, process all sits around there as well. But yeah, we've got to educate. We've got to have the right technology in place to be able to identify where we can, but then educate our team to use that technology that's available to them as well, and be able to identify on their own what to start looking for.
Exactly. And yeah. I'm a big advocate for the term sort of a cyber advocate. And yep. that's essentially is individuals in your organization where they've received the training, they understand the why. You can use technology to bring them on that journey as well. But by bringing them on that journey through these different ways of reaching out to them, it sort of move the goalposts for an organization's security. And the reason that's so important, especially in the email security space, is if they understand why they need to do things, one, you'll receive a lot less support tickets and a lot less friction. But it also mean overall, you've got more layers, which we talked about earlier, Tom, which is so important.
Yeah, that's right. And that's key. And people do respond to a why. And I think it's something we've learned, particularly working with a lot of organizations now on the human element side and the education piece. It is the why that will drive them. But it should be linked to a personal why, because we talk here and we're talking business and corporations, but these exact same emails end up in your personal account as well, doing exactly the same thing, trying to compromise even you individually.
Absolutely. And especially where people's personal lives and business lives are never that far apart. It's always adding value in order to help people move forward on this journey when they're not necessarily day-to-day cyber experts.
Yeah.
But can we just move them that one step forward and really help and enable them?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This one's my favorite. Like I didn't realize that underlying content that's in that email. That's pretty, well, I'm going to say it's impressive. From they do know that they're continually evolving. And as you say, that will trick a lot of systems. Yeah.
I know we've done quite a lot of work to sort of, especially for a lot of our proactive machine learning based sort of, we are a team of mathematicians at the end of the day,
yep.
of being able to turn a lot of these techniques against the criminals themselves, just because it's that approach of, rather than just saying this link is bad, this payload is bad,
yep.
being able to say, hang on, why is this anomaly happen? People don't normally have hidden text. What's going on here?
What's happening here? And I guess that's probably a big part of your role and your team's role is working through how these attackers are thinking and what they're going through, and obviously analyzing these in depth is a big part of it to build that mathematical formula that's gonna help us all. But yeah, so you'd be seeing a lot of this.
Absolutely. And probably the most interesting piece that myself and the teams get to do is go out and actually reverse engineer not just a phishing email, which is fascinating, as you can see from the presentation we've had today, but actually the tools they use to create these in the first place.
Yeah, okay.
Because from one tool, they can create 5,000, 6,000 different phishing attacks.
Wow.
Which is quite a huge scale, really.
Yep.
And the biggest surprise to me, and I've been doing this for over 10 years now, Tom, just specifically in fishing, and the thing that always shocks me is how easy they've made it for people to make these attacks. That sort of barrier of entry for criminals just keeps dropping.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
at this rate, my poor old mum will be able to create these attacks. It's getting to that level.
That's what it's like. Well, I remember it would have been years ago when I was doing some research into cyber and stuff like that. It was the sheer scale of the cyber criminal economy. I mean, it's bigger than some countries.
And
the amount of money that's going through there, and they are sophisticated organizations. They are sophisticated criminal organizations, literally to the point where you could buy a payload, get access to 24/7 support to help you manage, deploy, customize it. Like this is pretty full on.
Absolutely. I think of it from a macro global criminal ecosystem point of view. You know, when criminals are moving away from sort of the drug cartels into cybercrime, there has to be a lot of money there.
Yeah, that's true. Wow, that's out there. Wow, that's super impressive. And so I'm gonna go. We do need to go and do a bit of an analysis now on the egress platform, I think, and how is it working to identify some of these?
Absolutely. So I think the high level piece which might be worth starting on really is, how do we detect some of these threats? Because at the heart of any sort of technology solution, it's only as smart as its brain, really.
Mm.
And we've come at this from quite a different angle. And it's really coming at it from more of a cyber expert, Tom. If we sat down with a blank email, how do we evaluate that? So one thing to note is we do a lot of holistic based detection. And this is essentially, rather than just saying, let's look at the payloads, let's look at the text and the email in separation, we're looking at all of these things together. We call it co-evolving, where you've got small bits of evidence. If you're a police officer, you're going around a crime scene, you see a trail of evidence. And on their own, each bit doesn't really mean much. But it's when you combine them all together, a bit like how we as humans would evaluate some information, that's what gives you some of that power. And that's part of the high-level methodology which is effective. But digging into a bit more detail is understanding these attack channels and how you can counter them directly.
Mm.
The fact that criminals are using a lot of compromised accounts means we implement zero trust models. And what that means in the email context is we evaluate the content, the context, the language, all of the things we look at. And if it's perceived to be malicious, we call it bad regardless of any pre-existing relationship.
And this is where that compromise supply chain sort of can come into it, because every email we're getting, regardless of who's sending it, is being untrusted at the beginning.
Exactly. Yeah. It's almost you have to show your ID and prove yourself at the door before you get in.
Yep.
And because we know that you can steal someone else's ID, we're going to be looking very carefully to make sure that is you.
Yep.
And that's incredibly powerful, and sort of especially with such a sharp rise in the use of these techniques. But probably one of the most important elements is we've got this concept of one-to-many detection. And this is moving past a reactive approach where Yammer rules are updated from the firewall side or sort of a known bad database is kept.
Mm-hmm.
We're basically saying, okay, really, Tom, what is phishing? It's manipulation, obfuscation, and all of these building blocks of a phishing attack. If I go back to my favorite analogy of a brick wall, I talk about brick walls probably a bit too much, but you've got the point of view of there's only so many ways those bricks can be laid to make up a wall, a phishing attack in this case.
Yep.
And part of how the maths works behind Defend is by understanding what is and what a fish is and those building blocks. And probably one of the coolest things we have with this is if a criminal does do something new, it'll be a brick wall with a missing brick or two. And that automatically tells us what we need to look at and update. It still stands a very good chance of catching the attack.
Yep.
Because if you go too far away from a brick wall, it's not going to be a very good phishing attack.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, it's going to have. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
And lastly, probably most importantly, we do a lot of sort of elements around payload analysis, links and attachments, and a lot of traditional approaches which add a lot of value, especially when we're combining it with a lot of the other elements in the email. But it's all about understanding the language and the context of the email, the layout of the email, in order to figure out on a very human level, what's it asking? How is it trying to convince someone? Is there any emotional manipulation going on? And all of these things are combined together on both the positive elements, which is quite surprising in a security solution of we're not just looking for the bad, right, we're also looking at what's normal and what's good. I mean, Tom, if you asked me for a barbecue this weekend, like, I don't think I've ever seen a phishing attack asking someone around for a barbecue, not to date. Maybe this is going to be the start of a new trend.
Yeah, won't let this out too quick, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But it's that point of view of if we understand what's normal for each person and each organisation, on the both the good and bad, it allows us to be a lot more, have a lot more scrutiny while not having those annoying false positives for users and admins.
Okay.
So this sort of boils down behind of almost how the detection works. And this leads to sort of great success where we do see significantly more attacks than a lot of other vendors. And most importantly, because we sort of cross-validate this, is a lot of attacks that haven't been seen in the world before with zero-day malware, zero-day links, and those from those compromised accounts.
Yeah, okay. Wow. And that's, I mean, that's going to the, and that allows the system, I guess, to then better detect those really targeted ones as well, the spear phishing and things like that. And I mean, we see them all the time with, hey, I'm the CEO and I've just asked my new starter to go buy the Apple iTunes vouchers and things like that. It still happens. Like I heard a story from someone the other day and they still went and bought $1,000 worth of vouchers. But this is where this sort of comes in. We don't trust that email. We're identifying a lot of key components in there to then flag it as a, no, this is pretty much a phishing attempt.
Exactly. And it's moving the bar from sort of a methodology. Rather than being reactive and waiting for someone else to fall foul of an attack to help protect others, we're basically saying, what is bad?
Yeah.
And that's really powerful to do. But the other key point you mentioned there was around sort of the user side and how it looks to users. So we actually use these sort of coloured banners in the email, and they look the same on a mobile or desktop, so users have consistent experience. And part of the reason sort of it's quite powerful is it's a heat-based warning system. You've got blue banners for informational, amber for it's a bit warm, it's a bit suspicious, and red for this is dangerous. And the users can actually click on here to find out why something is bad. It's explaining to the user.
Yeah, and that's the big thing that I really like about this is that, it's red and someone will sort of flag. That's what I was talking about before. It'll flag for them. But when they click on that, it'll explain a little bit more about it. And it's not overly technical. It's sort of just going through some key things as to why this has been picked up and at least gives someone that ability to make a more informed decision.
Absolutely. And from our point of view, it is joining that together, that gap between that training element and that detection. And it also augments the other elements, the pre-existing training. So it helps unlock more value from that even.
Yeah.
Because it sort of breaks that type one, type two thinking. It makes users stop. Yep. But we do have other sort of safety nets in place. We've got the capability to rewrite all links to stop those time-based attacks we talked about earlier.
Yep.
And then users can once again, if they do click on something potentially malicious, it will tell the user why it thinks it's bad.
Yep.
So to continue that sort of consistent narrative.
Yep.
This is sort of an example of what it can look like for the user. So especially where a lot of attacks, they're bouncing across the globe over 20 redirects. Quite simply, you've clicked on this link, it's going here. And then if there's reasons,
really
show reasons of why.
Yeah,
let's just keep
and
it simple
for
the users.
That's really, really key because, as you say, that image was clicking to Google. The user would have, they'd hover over it. We've taught people to hover over it and check where it's going. Oh, okay, yep, that's going there. But no, there's that next layer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So part of the work I spend a lot of my time doing is ensuring that our technology is as cutting edge as possible, but ensuring it works for users at the end of the day and making sure it works for admins as well.
Yeah,
to try and save them the stress around email, which is sometimes so noisy and painful.
Oh, it is. It is. And it goes both ways. I mean, I know our team have been spending time where people's emails are getting incorrectly flagged as spam, not through this, but generally, and that causes enough angst as it is, let alone if it was a real spam and stuff. So yeah, it's a challenge.
Absolutely. And I think that's where the proactive approach of working with the user, having that positive engagement across all the things we've talked about today, Tom, is really a bit of a game changer in general, where it really helps that cultural journey. But even on a day-to-day basis, we see the impact for all of our customers of actually users are happier, they're more engaged, they're more understanding, they're paying more attention in their training. But then at the same time, admins get better visibility. It makes their life easier.
Yep.
There's less false positives for them.
Yeah.
And that's really the gin. And I know why we've had a lot of conversations on this is basically being able to augment and support organizations through this with some of the great things you're doing with your team.
Yeah, and that's where we've sort of seen it really, really well aligned and getting that is that we're doing a lot of that work on the obviously the technology side. So this augments really well to our standard Microsoft stack and the security elements that are in there. But we know it's not bulletproof, and this adds another layer. As I mentioned before, it's about layering. So this adds another layer, another level of visibility from an admin and from a user perspective. But then we couple that with the training element, because that is then the sort of final cog to that whole mechanism, in that we've got a great technology stack, we've layered it with this, providing real visibility, as you can see there on that, as to clearly this email, that Tony Pepper is the CEO, and that's great, but that's not his email address. Even if you didn't look at his email address, you know that's come externally now. I'm sitting in the office, it shouldn't be an external email. So it's educating and showing that. And that's what it's about. So linking all three of those elements together is really critical.
And just to show, this is the sort of viewpoint of that explainability.
Yeah,
is trying to keep it as clear as possible. We've even got sort of the dial of threat on the right hand side of how bad do we think this is? Is it just a little bit suspicious, or is it really suspicious?
Yeah. Yep. And that's it. And it's, well, you've got your reporting options there and things like that. But it's that stopgap and that step to make people think. And then when people are thinking about this and they've coupled that with the training and the learnings that they've done over time as well, it is really a key element to reducing that risk across the board.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, this is... Well, I've certainly got a lot out of it, Jack. It's been a great session, and I hope our listeners have as well. And whilst we go through this, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of questions out of this, and we'll definitely get to those, and we'll feed that all back as we go through.
It's been a real pleasure to be here and have a great conversation with Tom. Always enjoy our conversations about sort of the threat landscape and sort of some of the challenges and how we can overcome them.
Yeah, and it's an evolving thing, and I think I look forward to having another conversation about this, because I think even in 3 or 6 months' time, it'll be a very different conversation, which is scary in itself. But we know that we can continue to battle these things. So, thank you very much for coming on, Jack, and spending the time and running through that. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Happy days. I really appreciate it, Tom. I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks again, Jack.
Have a good one, mate.
Cheers, mate.